We are delighted today to be able to interview Mr. Melvin Holte from Gardner, North Dakota. In my opinion, and many other people's opinion, he is one of the most respected citizens in Cass County. He is now 96 years old. He lives by himself. Every time I have visited him, we must have coffee in his house, and it's always neat as a pin. He has always been an outstanding Chester White hog raiser, and believe it or not, he still raises from 25 to 40 hogs each year. He still drives his automobile to Fargo to his daughter's home. So now we will talk to our friend, Mr. Holte. All right, Melvin, we're going to interview you here a little bit and see what you have to say. And you've always been a farmer all your life. And we'll start out with your farm background. When did you start farming, and how did it happen?
I started farming. That is, I farmed with my dad for a number of years before I was married. Then we started farming in the fall. We moved to a small place down by the river.
That's
on the
Red
North
River.
Dakota side in the fall of 1919. And that was one of the hardest winters we've had in this part of the country. The snow in the woods down there was, it averaged more than 2 feet on the level. That's the kind of a winter we had in those days. Mm-hmm. And that was all horse farming in those days. As we went along a few years, it wasn't long before we'd add a tractor together with some horses, which everybody else did at that time. And in those days, of course, we raised chickens and turkeys, and I had beef cattle together with milk cows. And that's the way we farmed on a smaller scale.
All right. Now, can you tell us, in your years, all the many years you've farmed, what crops did you raise in the years that you have farmed?
Well, when we started, the only crop in the valley at that time, it was wheat, oats, and barley. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know of any other variety. Within 5 or 6 years, we started to add soybeans. And that is kind of ridiculous to think of it now, how we planted a few soybeans with a corn planter. And the amount of work we had with it and what little crops we had. If we had 15 bushels to the acre of beans at that time, why, the neighbors thought it was really something. Mm-hmm. Now, if we don't have 30 bushels to the acre, we don't dare to talk about it. That's the difference. And I could also mention after I retired, all the fertilizer was added. The last 2 years I farmed, I had a fertilizer attachment on the drill, and it didn't work very good. But it was a beginning. That was all that was to... And we didn't have any idea what to do about all the weeds. That has been one of the biggest items in the whole Red River Valley, is weeds. And since I quit farming, you could spray or also treat the soil in the fall for wild oats and stuff like that, mm-hmm. which we didn't have any, we didn't know what it was when I was farming. Mm-hmm. If that is one of the biggest things that has ever happened to the valley, is that we could take care of the weeds.
And I'm sure that when the combine came and the thrash machine went away, yep. The weed problem got worse because with the thrash machine, you all put it in one pile, all the weeds lit in one pile.
That's
and
very
the combine
true.
Spread it all over, and they just about had to have something to control the weeds, or they would have had a terrible time.
I don't know what would have happened to the country. Mm-hmm. If we hadn't had any way of controlling the weeds.
Mm-hmm. Now listen, you've mentioned that you raised wheat, barley, and oats, and soybeans. Now, did you ever raise flax?
Yes.
That was later on, later years.
We raised a lot of flax,
mm-hmm.
which was a good crop for many reasons. There was a lot of times when we didn't have any way of controlling the weeds, we could seed flax first part of June and have a good crop.
Mm-hmm.
Over in, that is normal weather conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So flax entered in very good.
And I suppose you raised a little corn in your day?
Yes. And from then on, I had corn every year.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to feed to my own livestock, to the hogs, as well as the beef cattle. And we could shell our own corn, feed the turkeys, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I guess we've hit on some of this already. But what about descriptions of changing in farming in your lifetime? Tell us about how, I know you started out with horses and about the time you got tractors and you fertilized and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the time while I was farming, of course, we had big thrashing machines for a number of years yet.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the late 30s and 40s, we started to get combines.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, in those days, in the day of the big thrashing machines, we could go to Fargo on Sunday afternoon and probably get 10 men if you wanted them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would know where we would go to get 10 men.
Yes.
If you go down the streets to Fargo and try to pick up 10 men, they think there was something wrong with you.
Pretty hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that the combines were a godsend.
Sure, yeah.
They have to be.
Yes, oh, they're wonderful, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what were some of your likes or your dislikes of farm life? There were certainly some things I'm sure you loved because you've done it all your life, but did you have some dislikes too? Explain that to us a little.
Well, the dislike to the farming we had a lot of hardships as far as roads are concerned. For hauling grain of any kind, or hauling livestock, winter or summer, it was a hardship for the roads. I can remember we had to shovel snow probably for a day or two before we could get a truck in the yard to haul livestock.
Mm-hmm.
Now those things have changed. Our roads are up, and we can take a snow blower and blow out the snow to drive in the yard at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the conditions.
Okay, now what kind of was farming during the Second World War? You were farming then. How did you get along with gas and coupons and all that sort of thing?
We got along very fine.
No trouble at all.
We had no trouble at all.
Mm-hmm.
Fine years.
Okay, now maybe you can tell us a little bit about the farm conveniences that we now have that we didn't have and about when they came, like electricity and
yes.
water and telephone and radio
yes.
and TV.
Well, let us start with the time we moved on our little place in 1919. The only thing we had kerosene lamps.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have a telephone for the first year or so.
You did have telephones that early, though.
Yes, and
mm-hmm.
we got the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the late, I happened to be one of helping organize the REA, which you were acquainted with,
mm-hmm.
which is with the headquarters at Kindred.
Mm-hmm.
So we were one of the first ones when the lines were run down towards Gardner. So then we got electricity.
Okay. Now, maybe you could tell us a little bit about the National Borrow Show or Hog Show that they had that you had just been to. That would be kind of nice to hear about that. You've just got back from it, I believe, a month ago or six weeks ago.
Yes, I was in Austin, Minnesota to the National, they call it the National Barrow Show, but they show all breeds and as well as all their top boars and gilts. We have all the different breeds I may mention now, being that I have the Chester White. They could probably have 100 head or more of one breed. And after the shows, they have a ruling there, the tops in East Division are sold. They have a sale after, mm-hmm. after the show. And then those that don't make the sale, they can sell. They have customers waiting there. They can buy hogs cheaper than those that made the sale, naturally, because the made the sale were all tops and they were sold. And
mm-hmm.
They were hogs that went all the way up in to 18,000 down to 400 or 500 in the sale, so you have that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I heard that you were given a little award about being one of the oldest Chester White hog breeders there. Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, the secretary for the Chester White Association was trying to question me. Somebody had told him that I had been in the hog business for 70-some years, and I guess he was questioning it very much. So he came and talked to me. I said at that time that my wife was still living. She passed away last fall, last December 5th.
How many years were you married?
71.
Oh, isn't that
we
something?
71. It was 72nd would have been now. This. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, tomorrow, if my wife had lived, we'd have had our 72nd.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I told the secretary that as far as the time of raising hogs, I've been married 71 years, I told him at that time. And I was raising hogs then, so I can't be far out of the way.
And then didn't you say something about you were the oldest breeder there or something?
Yes,
tell us about that.
And during all the noise that we have at those big sales, why all of a sudden everything stopped. The secretary got on the stage and said we had the oldest Chester White breeder in the United States with us. So he mentioned me by name. We had about 1,000 people stand up and cheer for me.
And that was a lot of fun.
Yes, there wasn't much money in it, but it was a lot of fun.
Okay, that's fine. All right. Now, who were some of your closest friends in the early days out there?
Well, my brother-in-laws were some of the very closest. I want to mention especially one man, which you know personally too. The youngest one that was left of the Onstead family was Manfred Onstead, the attorney at West Fargo. He was the youngest in the family. He has passed away a couple of years ago. We were very close continuously during the all those years.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what social events did you have in the early years? What did you do for entertainment and things like that?
I think everybody my age, or probably not as old as I am, would say that we had community clubs in practically every town, like out in Pearly and Gardner. My wife was very much on the to put on plays. We would work all winter probably to put on a play early in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a good sized hall in Pearly, and when we put on plays, there were standing room only. So we had, it was a lot of fun, very successful.
Mm-hmm. Now when you talk about Pearly, was Pearly your mailing address, or you
it
just?
It was to begin with.
I see. You were right. You're right on the Red River. So Gardner was really your address now.
Now
but Pearly was actually closer to you than Gardner.
Gardner is my post office now. I live 7 miles from Gardner, which is west, located on Highway 29,
mm-hmm.
and I'm only 3 miles from Pearly, Minnesota, which is located on Highway 75, going between Moorhead to Crookston.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Now, what holidays did you celebrate in those days, like Christmas and this type of thing?
Well, Christmas Eve was the big deal. We all had to go to Grandma's house for Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back, in those days when I was a youngster, practically every town that I know of, I can say like up in your area, in the Arlesville, Harwood, and all over, we all had 4th of July celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
We had parades, horses on big wagons, all decorated up with flags, queens riding on big hay racks, which was, it was really a lot of fun.
I can remember the Fourth of July picnics they had on our home farm for the Maple Cheyenne Lutheran Church. And there'd be the 500-600 people there.
Don't forget the ball games we used to have.
We had
them up in your country, too.
Always had ball games, A lot of good ball players in those days. You bet. All right, now let's see. What did you do for your education as you were growing up? How much education did you have? Where did you stop?
I went to grade school out in the country like everybody else. And then I went to Concordia. I took a high school subject at Concordia. And it was common in those days that a lot of the farm boys, together with all the newcomers, we call them, that would come from Scandinavian countries, they want to go to school during the winter to learn, especially they would want to learn the language. So I went to Concordia a number of years for high school subjects, also bookkeeping up there.
I see. Now, when you went to Concordia, is that when you said there were three buildings here at MS?
Yeah, there were three buildings on this place, and we had three buildings at Concordia when I entered there. We had the girls' dormitory and the boys' dormitory in the main building at Concordia, and over here we had three buildings. We used to come over here for basketball games. We were very much on the same. We didn't have much to brag about on either side.
Neither side. And you said the streetcar would come way out here?
Yes. Streetcar would go up to one of the buildings up here and then turn around and go back downtown again, come by Concordia so we could ride too.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
And that was the edge of town in those days, or probably out in the country, wasn't it?
Yes, out for Eventide is now. A lot of you people are acquainted on that on 7th Street going south of Concordia. Concordia used to have a barn out there. They had horses and cows, pigs.
They did.
Then you were out in the country.
Now, did you have any teachers that you remember that were real good or real tough? Were you a good boy all the time and got along with them?
I had one of the finest teachers I had at Concordia. Their name was Nelson. Her name was Clara Nelson. She started teaching. She had a sister by the name of Rose Nelson that worked in the office at Concordia. This Clara Nelson started in the teaching in the rural district, I think out in the Gardner area. So she was, my father knew him from out there. He was one of my finest teachers at Concordia.
Okay. Now, I guess we've talked about school and your social life. Publications read in those days. Did you get the newspaper way back then, like the Fargo Farm?
Yeah.
You got it?
Since I started farming myself.
Always
got the newspaper.
That. All right.
Yeah.
And then what farm magazines and books and things did you?
Well, we got the Farmer. We had at least two different farm magazines at that time.
I see.
Which were very good, too.
All right, and did they have many farm meetings back in those days at all?
Well, we did have a few. They had something called the Grain Dealers Convention and one thing and another. We had different meetings in Fargo, not like we have nowadays.
No. Now, we'll talk a little bit about your religion. You could tell about your religion and your church that you went. Maybe you'd like to tell about the Nora Church out there, how old it is. And
the Nora Church located about 4.5 miles east of Gardner there. My wife and I were both baptized and confirmed and married in that church.
And I believe that church was started in 1874, is that right?
Yes, we have about 110 years more than that now, yeah.
All right. And I know the church meant a lot to both of you, with visiting with your wife over the years. It was an important thing, and I suppose it had influence of lots of nice things for you over the years.
Yes, my wife was organist there for a little over 60 years before she got weak enough to, she started to fail, falling health, so she had to quit. She played in the church there the last time at her 100th anniversary.
Isn't that something? Yeah. That's wonderful. Now, how far was the church from your farm?
2 miles.
Oh, well, it was comparatively close, even if you had to drive there with horses. Yes, and the wintertime, I imagine you, how did you get there in the snowstorm?
Go with horses and sleighs.
That's how you did it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Now we'll talk a little bit about the federal farm programs. Now, were you on any of those?
Yes, I had. When that started, I can't give you the dates, I mean the years and that, but I mean, that was in the 30s and 40s also. The first farm program was started, I was on the local committee, which that was called the AAA, I think, or, well, it was the same, it means the same, it's the same farm program.
AAA.
And I was on the the local committee for a number of years, and then I was elected on the county committee. I was on the county committee for probably 4 or 5 years. After that, I had an appointment out of Washington in 54. I was then appointed on the state committee for a term.
Okay. Now, did you belong to any of the farm organizations like Farm Bureau, Farming Union, National Farm Organization, or Cooperative? Did you belong to any of those?
I used to belong to both the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union. Naturally, I would be having quite a bit to do with the Farmers Union because they were local, like in my hometown, so that we would visit together and patronize the home organization.
Well, now, did you belong to the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union both at the same time?
At one time I did.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of unusual, I guess.
Yes, it is.
Yes. All right. Now, what about 4-H activities? I know when I was a young boy, we used to go out to your house and your farm and judge hogs, and I was on the county judging team. Now, did you do any more than that for 4-H?
I was along organizing the 4-H club at home there.
I see.
Up in Noble and Weiser Township, you know, in the Gardner area there.
Well, you helped organize it.
Yes, helped organize it.
Mm-hmm. I see. All right.
And a lot of assistance from the county agents at that time.
Mm-hmm. Now, what has your relation been with county agents? You worked with them for 4-H and other things, too.
I worked them together with the county agents a lot because, well, during the time I was on the farm program, I was always working with the county agents as well as 4-H, and I used to judge hogs around on some of the smaller fairs, like over the Minnesota side, in Cookston at the winter show and one thing and another. So I knew a lot of county agents through the whole valley.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what's your attitude towards credit agencies, like in the tough years, like the banks and FHA and Federal Land Bank and PCA back in the 30s? Did you have seed loans or any of those kind of loans at all?
No, I didn't, but I had a lot of contacts with the banks, and they always get along pretty good. I can't say much about the rest of them because you can't talk about it. You know, I didn't have anything to do with them.
Didn't have anything to do with them.
No.
Okay, all right. Now, I guess we talked a little bit about the new farming methods, about fertilizer and machinery and insecticides and chemicals. Maybe we've covered that enough.
Yes.
I think we've talked enough about that. All right. Now, tell us about the effects of poor crops and the effects of your best crops. When you had a poor crop, did you have a tough time making it till the next year, or explain that to us a little?
I'll never forget, well, all the older people will remember 1936 in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, that was the time it was 114 degrees at the fairground when I started showing hogs. And Steele, North Dakota, reported 119 degrees at that warm. The crops were all burnt up. And also, during those 3 years that I was in the legislature, in 31, 33, and 35, you know, the west half of North Dakota or more, there was a lot of places there that didn't have anything for 2 or 3 years at the time. Not one but they never pulled out any machines. Didn't have anything to live on. Those were, we talk about tougher times now, but when they give you a good idea, I happened to be on the Appropriation Committee in the House, and we were sent down to Jamestown one day to look at a building. One Sunday we drove down there, five of us in one car. It's a building that was just about falling down, and it was braced with old telephone poles and one thing and another. But we didn't have any money to appropriate to fix those buildings. Now they talk millions, even if we're hard up. Spend a million here and a million there. Those are the differences.
Well, now, during the difficult personal and economic times, how did you survive? Were you suffering badly, or did you always had something to eat, I'm sure?
We always had plenty to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we farmed after we were, of course, we were still on a small farm, my wife and I. The good example is we always raised 100 turkeys in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to dress them and we'd haul them. They would be buying in the stations, like over on the Minnesota side in Purdue. We'd average $5 a bird for turkeys. Now, the turkey business is big business by itself. We can't have that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd sell, and also chickens.
Did you raise hogs back then, too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cattle. Mm-hmm. All right. On your size farm, how many horses did you have to pull your machinery when you first started out? Four horses?
Six. Six horses.
Six horses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What your background, what is your nationality? Maybe you could tell a little bit about both your father's side and your mother's side. Your mother was Norwegian, I know, and
yes.
You could tell about how she came here, and that would be interesting.
My father and mother were born in Norway.
Your father was Norwegian, too?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
When did your father come over here?
They came over here in 69.
69.
Yeah, that is, they came over to, they landed down in Houston County, Minnesota. That was my dad's folks. Dad,
I
and
see.
His folks. Yeah. And my mother's folks, they in, you may be interesting to know, in May in 1866, the Scow family, which was my mother and her sister, Mrs. O.E. Flayton of Moorhead was later, and one brother, Robert. Three of them were born in Norway. They started for America in 1866. And they made a pretty fast trip because they were 14 weeks and 3 days coming from from Norway to Quebec. They landed in Quebec over in Canada. Mm-hmm. Then come cross country to Winona, Minnesota, where Grandpa Scow was in the, helped build the flour mill in Winona. And worked there until in 70 when he started with his family and ox team, covered wagon for the Red River Valley. And when he came into Moorhead, they came by wagon all the way clear to Moorhead. When they came into Moorhead, the only thing here was some tents. It was the, I'm sure I'm right on this, was in, we call it the NP crew, Northern Pacific. They were surveying from down the St. Cloud area, wherever it was, down east, to get into Moorhead and cross the river to get into North Dakota. But that was all there was. My mother told about when they crossed the river down where we call the, that's the main avenue now.
Mm-hmm.
We call it the Front Street Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how they got across. They had to go down the hill. And there was some ferry deal, so they got across the river. And when they got up on the North Dakota side, Mother said the only thing in North Dakota was a dead Indian pony. You see, the Indians were good at that. If a pony broke his leg or something, they would shoot the pony. So there they had it. And then they started north. After they got on North Dakota side, this was in June in 70.
Well, now, you were, your folks were Norwegian, and you were born here, of course.
Yeah.
Did you, when you were brought up, were you brought up with the Norwegian language or the English language?
Oh, Norwegian.
And then when you went to grade school, did they teach you English?
Oh, we went to grade school out in the country. Sure, we had an English teacher, but we all talked Norwegian to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
The kids who all went out to play, they all talked Norwegian. Or like up in your area, no, before your day, they talked Swede just as fast as you can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, the language spoken in the home then would be
Norwegian.
Norwegian. Mm-hmm. But I suppose, did your parents even ever learn English?
Oh yes,
they did.
Yes, like we got to the 20s. Then everybody in our services in church were all turned to the English language in the 20s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, in the days of celebration, did you have any costumes that your family carried on from the old country?
Yes, my mother. We had until the very last years, my mother's costumes, different capes and stuff. They've been used in all places, all over the valley.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're disappearing one by one. But the old hats and old capes, they were pretty valuable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now we'll talk a little bit about politics. And offices that you've held over your lifetime, like in the county or the county board or farm organization, church, things like that. And what politician party did you belong to?
The Republican.
The Republican.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. You were in politics in 30, you said 31?
31, 33, and 35.
35. That was in Bismarck.
That was in Bismarck. My last session, the legislature in 35, was the first session in the new capital. So I was there when that was built.
All right. Now, you said your dad was also in politics out there. Now, tell us about him.
He was in the second session of the legislature in North Dakota, or the state of North Dakota. I can't tell you what year that was, but I think those large pictures.
Yes, it has a date on it. The ones that you just donated to Bonanzaville.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what is your attitude towards politics? Is it good or bad? A reaction to office holders and so forth? What is your feeling towards politics today?
Locally, right now, whether you are in Minnesota, whether you're Republican or Democrat, it has been getting better. To my notion, than it was here a few years back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, now, is there anything else you could tell us before we close here?
Well, I think you've done a pretty good job asking questions.
Right.
Do you have anything else?
No, it's been wonderful for you to come in and do this afternoon, and we want to thank you very, very much, Melvin Holte. We're proud of you.
Pleasure is all mine.
Thank you for coming.